We're talking today with our wheat breeder from Oklahoma State University, Dr. Brett Carver. Brett, you were one of the presenters here at the OGI meeting and talking about, you were able to talk a little bit about the program as it stands right now. I thought we might talk about that, but also some about these bigger picture issues that you're kind of grappling with right now to help, you know, the wheat industry move forward. First of all, tell us a little bit about the varieties that you've got in the program. How close are we to maybe a couple of new releases?
Oh, very close. I feel like every year we're going to be close to something. Is what is that something, you know? And right now, I feel like we're kind of shoring up the fringes a little bit. We have some gaps where I think we need to fill in our lineup. We don't have other than Double Stop a wheat streak mosaic resistant option, so we're going to be looking at that for the immediate future. Just went through the Wheat Quality Council. It looks acceptable. It's not stellar like Double Stop, but very good and good resistance. So that's going to be for the Panhandle. We're looking at and I've talked about this with the producer before, but again, we just went through Wheat Quality Council testing, so I kind of have that validation now. A barley yellow dwarf resistant option, that's so important, you know, in Oklahoma. That's a very common disease, although last year I think was the first year ever.
Yeah.
I didn't see it. Another clear field option besides Double Stop, maybe in that Double Stop genetic family, but a little bit different forage potential, one that comes out of ground a little bit faster, covers the ground faster, and I think is very good in terms of weed competition. We need to prove that, but in theory, it looks that way.
Right.
There's a lot of other things, and I'll go over this at the OGI annual meeting in a little bit more detail, but we're not running out of things to look at. The issue is narrowing it down to something that's, okay, what do we really want to commercialize?
Right. Are you going to be moving at some point to maybe add a coaxium, a product?
Oh, I'm glad you asked that. Yes, that's being worked on, and actually pretty rapidly, thanks to double haploids. Mm-hmm. In fact, we do have the first round of double haploids running through Heartland Plant Innovations. That's where we do most of our double haploid work there. So we will take the progeny from that work and go probably to Arizona next year instead of staying in Oklahoma, just so we can get a larger seed availability so that we can really start testing the next year. So, you know, next year this next crop year would be our seed increase. And then after that, you know, it's just Katie bar the door. We've got material we can look at. We got to fish through it, find the best material for Oklahoma.
Right. You had several things I thought I was kind of interested in maybe visiting with you a little bit about in your presentation this morning. One, you obviously kind of hit that thing that seems to be a pretty overwhelming issue in some ways, especially when you talk to consumers, and that's that issue of gluten.
Oh, yeah. This has been a thorn in my side for so many years. It just totally caught me off guard. I'll never forget it. September 2011 is when I first heard this idea that wheat gluten in modern wheat is different from the wheat gluten of yesteryear's wheat. And I didn't really have any way to challenge that, you know, to refute it or even agree with it for that matter. Yeah. So kind of got shifted research a little bit in that direction without drawing or detracting from our variety development efforts. And so today was the first time I was able to present in a public forum like this the results of a several-year study. Mm-hmm. And we just went after what the industry considers perhaps the strongest gluten peptide that elicits a sensitive response in certain individuals. Mm-hmm. And try to quantify that, you know, over breeding history. And, wow, it's really interesting. There's just no change whatsoever. It's something we thought would be true, but we had no evidence to back it up.
So these ancient grains didn't have something over us today?
Well, not so much the ancient grains. We're only making the comparison of today's wheat versus the generations before it, going back to the beginning of plant breeding, wheat breeding. And the beginning of wheat breeding for the Great Plains, for hard red winter wheat, is turkey.
Right.
So that's what we wanted to address, is that issue. Has modern plant breeding done something to the wheat to cause a heightened sensitivity in our population? No. Plant breeding in hard-bred winter wheat has not. We can firmly say that now. When you talk about ancient wheat or ancient grains, we're talking about ancestry going back thousands of years, not just 100 years. Mm-hmm. And during that course of history, plant breeding, of course, was not going on. Evolution was. Mm-hmm. Domestication was. All these things that caused changes in the genome. And mm-hmm. those changes, yes, could lead to what we have to deal with now in our modern wheat. Mm-hmm. It wasn't through plant breeding. It just happened spontaneously. You can compare spelt, no, not so much spelt, but emmer, and there's lots of different versions of emmer that you hear about, versus common wheat. And yes, there may be a little bit less immunotoxicity in that emmer, old ancient grain. There's one genome missing, the D genome. And that D genome, excuse me, does confer a certain peptide. It enables the expression of a certain peptide. That's the one we're looking at as being the one most toxic.
Right.
So it's not even present in some of our ancient grains.
Right.
Not really a fair comparison, but we have to make that.
Mm-hmm. You talked a little bit about the fact that, you know, you are, and other breeders are working toward looking at ways to maybe find something to help deal with the celiac response and allow people, you know, to enjoy wheat, but be able to be protected from that.
About the only way to address the celiac response is, and this is a condition where, you know, you just cannot consume gluten or at very low levels. That, you know, the way that has to be addressed is you take the gluten out. Mm-hmm. That's a drastic approach. Or there's other ways, of course, and Brad Seaborn talked about it today, is, mm-hmm. you know, using supplements that enable the digestion of the protein in our digestive tract, or basically a pill. You know, I think that's a better option than just taking the gluten out, mm-hmm. because when you take the gluten out, you're taking the background out of wheat.
It sounds like from our wheat buyer today here from Grupo Bimbo, he was talking about the need to have a high functionality wheat in order to handle the high speed modern processes.
Right, and now we're taking gluten in another direction. We're not talking about taking gluten out. We're talking about making the gluten more functional, making it stronger than what it is. And I don't think we've lost so much strength in our present-day varieties, but there's so many varieties out there with varying degrees of strength. When you put them all together in the elevator, you don't really get the functionality that has been bred, say, in a Double Stop or in a Ruby Lee. It's diluted. So those the industry is not able to tap into that functionality like it should be.
Right.
We hope to change that.
You obviously, I think one of the more telling statements I heard all morning long was kind of a statement you had in the bottom of one of your slides. You talked about that we need to get to that point of mindset of no longer we're grain farmers, but we're producing a food crop.
Exactly. Yeah, this is the prize food of human civilization. It's what got us started, you know, and that's the way we need to approach it from a plant breeding standpoint. Let's not just think about yield, test weight and protein. We'll do that, but let's be a little bit more sophisticated and give this food crop the attention it deserves, mm-hmm. and bring out the best qualities of it. I mean, there's a lot of good qualities in the wheat germ, bioactive compounds that help us in our health and nutrition. There's things in the bran, of course. You know, we can also influence to some degree the kind of starch that's deposited in the wheat kernel, a healthier starch. Not that what's in there now is not that healthy, but we can make it healthier. Those are the kind of that's the frontier where I think we are approaching, if not in, mm-hmm. to address through conventional wheat breeding.
Right. So if you were staying here talking to a wheat farmer today, doesn't a whole lot about your program, what would you want to try to communicate to them in a nutshell about what you're trying to accomplish for them?
I'm trying to give them the whole picture. You know, it's not easy to grow wheat. I understand that. And all it takes is certain condition in our soil, a major drought, and it just completely wipes out 100 years of genetic progress. I realize that. But we're trying to put as much insurance into that wheat crop as we possibly can. The best insurance for wheat is a biological kind that comes ingrained in that wheat, genetically speaking, you know, to withstand whatever stresses there are out there. So, we really do. We honestly do. I've just got through talking about Wheat Streak Mosaic and Barley Eldor. those are frontiers that we really haven't addressed before. We are now.
Mm-hmm. And the complete idea, package. And at the end of the day, the idea is that if you do get those right climatic conditions,
yes,
then your the genetic potential shows.
Yes, and you can get the benefit of that full potential. And that full potential is pretty impressive. You know, at 100 bushel yield is we talk about it like it's a rare thing, but it's not that unusual. 150 is not that unusual. We had that potential. We just need to be able to reach it. And it helps to have a little bit of luck from Mother Nature.
All right. Very good. Thank you.
Thank you.